Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today we have a very special guest. Her name is Sophie Grégoire Trudeau, and she is a woman who has written an amazing book about mental health. When I first heard about this project, I was so excited that someone like the wife of a Prime Minister of Canada would be interested in mental health. And little did I know how much she was involved in yoga, not just yoga on the mat. She is a certified yoga teacher, but also the philosophy of yoga for life. And so if you're even considering reading this book, I urge you to go out and get it. She is talking about things like attachment theory. Some of you know she has interviewed world-class experts like Gabor Mate, and they are all throughout the book. She has a whole section on polyvagal theory. Like, the whole world is going to start to understand and know the things that we as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, and yoga enthusiasts have been studying for a long time. I think Sophie is going to bring this into mainstream, and I could not be more thrilled. So it's interesting to interview Sophie. She's so humble. She is not into image at all. She really is a person who wants to do good in the world and change the direction of humanity so that we love one another, we care about one another, we can come closer together. And in spite of all that, it does not hurt her cause to say that this month she is on the cover of Vogue magazine for the May issue. Her book comes out on around the end of April. So you can see her in Vogue. You can also see her on the cover of Elle, which is amazing. And then I have another article that I've been reading as I was researching for this interview, and it's from the Khaleej Times. And I would just want to read a paragraph out of that article that really struck me. So this is from March 14th, 2024. Today, most experts on emotional intelligence and parenting coaches are emphasizing on trauma being rooted in our formative years, arguing how our view of relationships and circumstances could be a response to our childhood. This, in many ways, puts emotional literacy right at the center of mental health conversations, because in the absence of truly knowing and understanding what has happened to you, you will not be able to process what you are going through. And I think that really leads us into the neurobiology of safety and security, starting from, you know, as Sophie talks about in this interview, 3 months of age. And how does that influence us as human beings as we grow, even as adults? It is connected back to that attachment theory. If we're securely attached, if we're disorganized attachment, if we have anxious attachment, if we have avoidant attachment, or some combination of that. If you haven't looked into attachment theory, Google it. It is so amazing. To have someone like Sophie write a book on mental health that brings us all the way from these very early childhood experiences, all the way up to who are you? Why are you here? How can you be of service? What are you going to do with this precious life that you have? She has woven these very yogic ideas throughout the entire book, along with her story of her childhood and growing up and the courting of Justin Trudeau and she and how that all went down. They had 3 children. Of course, she became his wife and really is a woman so confident in herself. She is an emotional leader of her family, of her community, and I would say of the world, even though she would probably not want me to say that. So this whole interview has yoga philosophy woven all the way through it. And I'd love you to listen carefully when she talks about not getting caught up in image, when she talks about being of service to the world, when she talks about how to make it through really hard things one breath at a time. I think you're going to hear over and over and over yoga and yoga philosophy just woven through the way that she sees the world, the way she shows up in the world. So I am proud to have her as a yoga sister. And I think this book has the potential to reach millions of people that have never heard of things like the work of Gabor Mate, have never heard of Stephen Porges and polyvagal theory. She has a whole chapter on that. And I think it's really going to elevate the conversation around mental health and help people put all of these pieces from attachment theory to the work of Gabor Mate, all the way to Stephen Porges and polyvagal theory. I think it's going to help bring these things together so that people can see a more holistic view of mental health. And from that place, we can jump off and find solutions for the people who are lonely, depressed, anxious, for our youth who may be feeling like they don't have meaning and purpose, for those people who have really had a difficult time in the COVID-19 pandemic. And then what are we going to do together moving forward? How are we going to come closer together so that we can change this world towards the light? She talks about this a lot in the interview, that we have to stay focused on that light. We cannot let the dark forces win. You know, there's a story from some of the ancient teachings about this too. The devas and the asuras and the fight with light and dark. And that is every single one of us has that responsibility to look towards the light, to become the light, and to fight the darkness. It is there. It's real. And in the very end, I ask Sophie if she thinks there is hope for us. And I'm going to make you wait for that answer at the end of the interview. All right, let's get right into it. And I'm very happy to share this interview with you. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour Season 7. We are so happy that we can share this time together each week. It's a really important part of our week, and I hope that it is for you too. We also want to invite you to the Optimal State app for iPhone and for Android. Your first month is free. We're going to start offering meditation circles for new moon, for full moon, for the solstices and the equinoxes. We're going to build a community around this app. So why not jump over to the iPhone store or the Android store, download the Optimal State app for free, and start to join our community and start to have more resources in addition to the podcast. We'd love to see you over there. Welcome, Sophie. It's so nice to have you with us today. Thank you for coming and your busy, busy schedule.
It's my honor. Everybody's lives are chaotic and fast-paced, so let's quiet down together. Thank you for having me, Amy.
So today we're going to talk about this amazing new book that I am so excited about called Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves, Loving Each Other. So just tell us about that. Even the title warms my heart.
Oh, you know what? It warms my heart as well. And I'm so proud that you collaborated in this book and your voice is so important. And I think that it will help people. And this is why I wrote the book. So Closer Together, there is no other way to be able to face the crises that we're facing in our world right now and to find creative solutions and more justice if we do not get closer together. That's the key. Connection and lack of connection is at the root of so much trauma in our lives. But connection and getting closer together is part of the solution. So it's fascinating that, you know, our own inherent nature of wanting to connect and needing it for our, not only our survival as babies, but our thriving in life, right? So knowing ourselves and loving each other, the more we get to know about how we function as individuals, how we love, how we work, how we interact with the universe, and why. Why do we react the way we do as well? There's a neurological imperative to all of this. And it is fascinating. And it's less complicated than we think. So, closer together, knowing ourselves, yes, loving each other. If we do come closer together, if we tell each other our stories, if we are vulnerable enough to show our true selves, we will give ourselves the biggest chances to evolve as societies, as families, as nations, as countries, to build more peace and to be able to make sure the human race evolves under the better angels of her nature.
I love this message because instead of something out there that we have to chase, essentially what I hear you saying is it's inside of us. It's our decision to take responsibility for our lives and to connect with our loved ones. And then from the inside out, it grows to society, to our communities, to our nations, to our world.
Absolutely, Amy. But what I've realized, and I think other people might understand what I'm saying here, is that when we live in a society, in a culture where self-betrayal is rewarded, change the way you look, don't age, act a certain way, you know, define your success a certain way, and we're kind of kept in boxes that are to our detriment from an emotional perspective, from a psychological perspective, and even from a physical perspective, because now we work in front of computers and we're betraying our true nature by not moving as much as we should be moving, by not connecting as much as we should, by not spending enough time in nature, by not having healthy enough food to be able to nourish the only body that we have in this lifetime, and stressful lives where our sleep is now affected, and sleep disturbances and insomnia is a pandemic in itself, an epidemic in itself. So many people right now are suffering from, you know, lack of good sleep. And then it affects the whole fabric of our lives, our energy levels, the energy we have to exercise, the way we interact with others, our levels of patience. And here's the neurobiological imperative here again, is that when we're depleted and tired and we're in that kind of like rat race, and also the rat running into, you know, the little gerbil running into its wheel in our minds, and we just can't stop, we go from being in a parasympathetic mode, so rest and digest, and that's part of our autonomic nervous system, but we're chronically stuck in our sympathetic fight, flight, freeze, alert mode. So when we stay there for too long, we become sick psychologically and physically.
I think you just did a beautiful summary of a lot of what's in your book.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about the neuroscience of how to care for ourselves, how to care for our loved ones, how to raise healthy children, how to have emotional intelligence.
I have chills because not too long ago I heard, what is emotional leadership? What is emotional leadership? It is taking a breath when I don't want to.
Mm.
And I think that's a metaphor for life. It is helping out when I don't want to. It is listening to my partner when he or she is angry at me or they are angry at me, but I don't want to. It is offering compassion and empathy when I don't really want to. It is sticking with a project when I want to leave it.
Mm.
We have a tendency in our society, because we consume so rapidly, to swipe, you know, right or left. I'm not on any of those apps, but still I've heard of them. And we kind of like, we've been taught that when we're getting worried or tired of something, we just kind of slay it. Instead of restructuring it, whether it's a working relationship, whether it's a loving relationship, and we lack the emotional maturity and the relational maturity to do so. And by the way, I'm not perfect. And it's not our fault. We were not educated to do this. So we can't magically become relationally literate and wise because all of a sudden we know how to regulate our and co-regulate our nervous systems with our partner and how to do it. So this education, and through the book, by the way, yes, I talk about the neuroscience, but I went to get the best experts out there, including you, Amy, to tell us how to do it in practical ways. I didn't want it to be complicated. And at every beginning of chapter, because I suffered from anxiety and eating disorders for such a long time, I wanted to share my story and to be vulnerable so people could relate that they're not the only one suffering. So every beginning of chapter is my story. And then we go into an interview with an expert like I did with you. And we kind of dig in together in a very simple and profound at the same time conversation. So people can really easily access wise knowledge and also truth and scientific facts to help them on their own path in their own lives.
I have to say, I was glued to the stories all the way from your childhood, all the way through your adulthood. There was something so wholesome about it. I don't know if you feel like you had a very wholesome upbringing, but it brought me back to like, this is what life is about. This is why we're here.
Yeah, you're giving me goosebumps again. I think you're right. Yes, there was a part to my childhood because I grew up in nature at a very young age and I was an only child and I was left alone a lot, right? With parents who loved me, but who had their own issues. I think that my connection to nature, therefore to life, to greater forces, right? However you want to define them, whether they're divine, God, whatever. It was instilled in me at a young age to have respect and to bow to what is greater than who we are, right? Small creatures who suffer through a lifetime and who really are just looking for love and validation along the way. So yes, the wholesomeness of my childhood with its obstacles as well, because no childhood is without obstacle. Yes, you are right, Amy. I think that some type of quality of love that I got and how I got to interact with life and my surroundings, there was a very authentic symbiosis. And for me, that is wholeness. Yeah.
And it just comes through the book so viscerally, even all the pictures of you in nature and you. I
had to choose because there's so many pics and there's some wild ones. And I was like,
you know. Oh, I was in awe of them. And it had this quality of, wow, she's just like us.
Yeah.
Also knowing you're a global figure and you're not just like all of us.
So yes, I am. And here's the thing. We have this obsession with fame and celebrity. And to me, the moment you believe in a title, a role, a famous aspect, you're doomed because you're disconnected from yourself and you're disconnected from others. I refuse to believe in that. I'm aware that there's a public part to my life, but my life is not public. I have 3 kids. Like, I run a household. I help them out. I'm there for them. I hold the emotional load of our family. I try to do my best and it's still messy and I'm still trying to figure it out. And I had to restructure my relationship and I had to change, you know, my marriage. And it's not easy. Nobody's path is easy. And here's the lesson. I've met kings and queens and people with incredible titles and accomplishments. And I've met people who have none. We are all the same. We all deserve the same kind of love and validation as we come into this world as babies and as we grow as adults. So my responsibility as a human being is to make sure that in my interaction with others, I don't think I'm higher or lower. We're the same. So I try to remind myself of that very regularly in the work that I do, because for me, I'm serving others. I'm of service in this life. And that's clear to me. And I have to really sit there because I want to stay congruent and filled with integrity on that path.
I can tell you every interaction I've had with you, and there's been quite a few by this time over these last couple of years. That's how it feels. It feels like you're meeting me as a human being. And you're just showing up in a very present way, juggling the life that you have. And I admire that because I think it would be very hard not to get caught up in the image and the role that you have and the fame.
I've seen a lot of emotional damage into people who have believed their titles and their suffering, Amy. The one lesson here also to take in is that we should never compare our suffering. Right now on the planet, there are wars raging, you know, people's rights being violated in all kinds of atrocious ways. And we are responsible for making sure that we create more peace in our families so that it can reverberate into the world. And at the same time, we can't compare what one is going through compared to the other, because suffering is suffering. And it's not because you didn't have deep trauma in your life that you don't live with chronic stress in other ways that are hurting you. So we have to be very discerning of judging other people's suffering and see, well, that's greater, that's lesser. You know, you shouldn't complain about this, but that's how people feel. First, let's listen deeply. We've lost that capacity as well because we're always in a rush. Are we truly listening deeply? And what does that mean? When you get into a fight with your boyfriend or with your friend or lover or work colleague, whatever, you can't regulate 2 brains at the same time. And you know this in the work that you do. It's one brain and then it's the other. One person talks, you listen. You don't intervene. And then you let the other talk. And you make sure that you're in an environment that is safe and that promotes safety in the kind of language that you share. Now, we talked about the fact that on this planet, I think the research and the data isn't clear yet, but they're seeing that almost half of the population are in their sympathetic nervous system, therefore in alert mode, fight, flight, freeze. So when we are in fight, flight, freeze mode, if you're overstressed at work, if you're going through challenging relationships, if your teenagers are driving you crazy, if you're, whatever it is, right? If you're constantly fighting against life, against the flow of life and yourself and each other, you're probably way too often in a fight, flight, freeze mode. So when we don't know how to regulate there and come back to a state of rest and peace, what happens is that it's much more difficult for us to have self-compassion, empathy, and to offer it to others. So again, our neurobiology and how we react to stress as human beings holds so much of the part of the peace in our democratic systems and our just interactions. So this is it's quite a pickle we're in, but it is fascinating to align and to dig into the research and science that is going to help us to come back to more a homey place inside of ourselves so we can find it in others as well. And by the way, in the book, I interviewed a psychologist who's been working with people for 30 to 40 years. And she said, the most unhappy individuals I've ever met are the ones who cannot trust in the other.
Wow.
And that makes me want to cry, because what does that say about that person if you can't see the beauty in others? If you don't feel safe enough in yourself, because probably you grew up in an unsafe environment or you have chronic stress in your life and you don't feel safe, then it's more difficult for you to connect with others. And social isolation, as we've seen with the pandemic, is extremely dangerous for the mind and the body.
Absolutely. And can we take that into the part of the book where you talked about attachment theory? I mean, first of all, for everyone listening out there, the culmination of things like attachment theory, polyvagal theory, like neurobiology that is in this book, yoga, meditation, nature, relationships, it is amazing. But I want to go to attachment theory first, because you just mentioned that the people who seem to be suffering the most are those who cannot trust.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about secure attachment and what that looks like. And then I don't know if you'd be willing, but like, are you trying to cultivate that with your children? I would imagine.
Of course I am. Are you kidding? For sure. I'm just a mom like everybody else trying to do my best. So yeah, people are listening right now and you don't know much about the theory of attachment. Very simply, the way you were cared for as a baby by your caregiver, whether it's a mom, an auntie, a grandmother, a father, whatever. The way they cared for you, the way you were carried as a baby, the way your mother, I'm going to use the word mother, the way your mother looked at you and how long she gazed into your eyes, the way she interacted with you, played with you, nourished you, the way she reflected what your perception of the reality was as a sense of validation in everything you did. Of course, no parent is perfect. And we're not pointing fingers here saying, oh, well, you're like this today because your parents did X, Y, Z, and or they didn't do X, Y, Z. But remember this, safety isn't just an absence of threat, okay? It is the presence of connection. So from 0 to 3 years old, if your parent attended to your needs and was present and gave you enough stability emotionally to make you feel safe, it wired something in your brain that you carry into your teenage years and into all your adult relationships, depending on also the life experiences that you went through as a child and, you know, what we call epigenetics, how the environment affects as well your genes and how you grow and how you interact with the world. So you can have a secure attachment. You can have an insecure attachment or disorganized type of attachment. And it's really fascinating to take the test, and it's not very long. So if you're listening right now and you're kind of wondering, well, you know, what kind of attachment do I have and how can it serve me today? Know this. If you think a child in you, okay, and we're talking about 0 to 3 and then 3 to 6, when the logical brain and the mathematical brain, which is the left brain, is more triggered, it's the right brain, which that dance between your caregiver and yourself for the first 3 years of your life sets a tone, a symphony, a music that follows you from an emotional perspective for your whole life. So if you think that that child is still not present in how you live today, you'll be very surprised to learn what's in this book and to understand that it's our universal common denominator. We all have a sense of or not of attachment, healthy or not. So if we understand that better, we can understand our partners better. We can understand our children better. We can understand the adults in our workplace better. And it gives us a little bit more tools to be able to deal with difference, because the most insecure people have a very difficult time dealing with others' difference. The more secure people have a better transition and better capacity to adapt and feel less threatened by people's differences. Again, look at the state of the planet. This explains so much.
It really does.
Yeah.
And having such an important place in the world, has it been hard to stay really present with your own children? Or do you feel like it's kind of a natural thing that flows out of you in terms of making sure your children hopefully have secure attachment?
So two things. I've never perceived me or my life as being an important presence in the world. I've seen my mission in life, my value-based mission, as a sense of responsibility. And I think my children have nourished themselves from that energy. I decided when they were born to be very physically present for my children. I have carried them in strollers and bicycles and, you know, slides through all the seasons and winter and to daycare, to school. I'm there for pickup. I'm in their lives and I'm invested emotionally in their lives. Am I perfect? Absolutely not. Am I still trying to figure it out? Yes, I have two teenagers and a 10-year-old. But I'm a good person. I'm a loving person and I just want to be better. So sometimes my children put back my truth right into my face and I'm like, what did you just tell me? And then I, wait a second. It's true. Like my son told me the other day, you know, I'm not like you and I don't have to be like you. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of right. And my daughter as well teaches me so much. And my little one as well. I feel grateful to learn from them. It's not easy always, obviously. But yeah, I want them to take the test now that you mentioned this.
So, you know, when your son says, Mom, I'm not like you, I also read in your book, Liz Plank referred to you as an original. That's what she said. Sophie is an original. And I love that. I love that you're willing to be yourself completely, even showing up flawed or imperfect, even knowing you're going to fall short some days. But when Liz says you are an original, what does that mean to you?
It makes me giggle. She's biased just because we love each other. It makes me laugh. I mean, again, if I believe that, oh, I'm an original, come on, like, come down your high horse here. Like, what does that mean? But at 49 years old, I take this compliment humbly and simply. And for me, what it means when I think about it and when it's reminded to me like that, I didn't know that she said that. So you're reminding me of this. It makes me giggle because she's funny and we have fun together. But it also makes me think that I think when you wear your heart on your sleeve, sometimes you get hurt, but it always is the way of integrity. And I love humans. I will not hide away from that. And I need humans' nourishment. I remember feeling solitude, which is beautiful, right? Growing up, as I was an only child, I developed that sense of being with myself was kind of fun, but also a lot of loneliness. So I'm very sensitive to others' suffering. And when somebody feels sad or lonely, I want to help, right? So if that's what she means by original, that I'm staying true to my nature, which I hope is a nature that can be in service because I have so much love inside me for humanity, then okay, I will accept the compliment. At 49, I'll take it.
You really do wear your heart on your sleeve and you're so passionate. Do you ever get tired of being hurt or, you know, because it's inevitable in every relationship, eventually someone's probably going to hurt someone. Do you ever get tired of that or do you take it in stride and say, this is just part of the process?
So my answer would be in two parts, because I think when it does happen, because of course I'm going to get hurt by people. I'm a human being, right? Even though I try to develop my emotional knowledge of myself and how I react, I think in the moment, I might be sad. I might be offended. I might be angry. I might be sad. And of course it happens to me. But then I often ask myself, okay, why am I receiving it this way? And can I understand better why that person said it that way? That's what I try to do in my close relationships. I don't really get hurt by strangers or anything, right? The other thing that I think I've worked on is to not take things too personally. In my life, I've had to confront situations where I had to make the decision of taking the world's perception and throwing it out the window, and to come back to me and to what matters to me, and to not try to change my behavior to please. We come into the world with the most two basic needs. And I'm quoting Gabor Mate here, Dr. Gabor Mate, who participated in the book as well, is attachment, our need to be taken care of and to be under somebody else's care solely for that, for our survival as babies. And then authenticity, to be able to express our true creative selves without having to change our behavior to please and to be loved. We all do it, by the way. Okay. We all do it. We all do it as kids. We all do it as adults in different ways, micro ways, big ways. And that's fine, because that's our deepest longing for human connection. So when I'm hurt, when I cry, when I'm angry, I let it out, right? I don't try to keep it in. And then I try through my practice of yoga and meditation and going for, you know, a very necessary walk sometimes, or fresh air, like, okay, come back to your breath. Emotional leadership is taking a breath when I don't want to. Okay, I don't want to. I'm still going to freaking do it. And there have been tears on my mat, and there has been, you know, sweat and confusion. It's okay. We're all trying to navigate through the fog of life, and it hurts. And by the way, if we get to understand that suffering and pain, and we're excluding all like situations of abuse here, and okay, that we can go through that as human beings. We can navigate that. We have what it takes to navigate that, to evolve and grow stronger and more adaptable and more resilient at the same time. So I think in a way, sometimes emotional pain can be a gift. If you decide to open up to see, why am I hurting so much and why am I reacting this way? I think it can be an emotional leadership gift in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For about a year now, Optimal State has been offering a yoga therapy clinic. Every week, we have people come together to work on certain things that are happening in their lives, whether they're feeling burnout or anxiety or insomnia or depression. Maybe they have low back pain or neck pain, but we spend an entire month as a community coming together to work on these issues. So whether you have these things happen to you personally, or whether you want to know how to work with them professionally, we invite you to our Monday night yoga therapy clinic. If you're doing it for personal growth and development, it is one price. If you'd like to use it as continuing education units, it's a little different price, because we add on a small discussion after the class for those who are hoping to get continuing education. We'd love to invite you to this yoga therapy clinic, whether you're doing it for personal or professional reasons. Come to www.theoptimalstate.com and look for the Monday night yoga therapy clinic. Hope to see you there.
Many people probably don't know that you actually are a yoga teacher and you do a lot of yoga and meditation. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal practice and how you keep yourself sane on the yoga mat?
Yes. So I began practicing when I was pregnant with my first child. I have three children, and that child, Xavier, is now 16 years old. And I remember going to my first class and feeling that I had a sense of coming home. People around me, the energy in the room, what the teacher was saying. And then I started practicing more here and there. And then I had a baby, my first baby. And then I went back to it here and there. And then time passed by. And then I came back to the practice. And I'm like, why did I ever leave this practice? It's giving me so much calm and rest. And the most potent version of ourselves is calm and rested. But when we live in a society where we don't even feel worthy of rest, and when time becomes a luxury and we can't quiet, we suffer. We suffer greatly. And I'm not talking about suffering that's necessary to evolve here. So my yoga practice grew with the years. And then I decided to do my teacher training with an incredible teacher in Montreal. And my kids were young. And I remember like Justin had to step in. He wasn't in full politics at that time, and he helped out, and he was amazing while I was in the studio, you know, wanting to learn more. And I studied yogic philosophy, and this is not a religion. It's really about understanding the physics of the body and the world, and to apply it in a way that you take the veils of your confusion away in your mind. And when you practice different types of yoga, it depends on which one you choose, you warm up the body to clear what is in your way of your own self. So then the mind can be clear. So we warm up the body to cool the mind. That is the practice of yoga, so we can come back to ourselves, for me. And it has been my savior. It has been patient with me. It was always there for me. I can unroll my mat anywhere from 2 minutes to an hour usually when I can. And I travel with a very thin mat that I can just fold in my luggage when I'm working. And I just try to be disciplined to offer myself the gift of showing up for myself, of being my good parent. I think as we grow in age, what we learn is that we have to reparent ourselves, not because our parents didn't do a good job, and maybe they didn't, and maybe they had their own trauma, but it is our responsibility to do so, because there is no consciousness without responsibility, and there is no responsibility without consciousness. So that kind of goes together. And where we are right now, facing the crisis that we're facing on this planet, we have to be consciously responsible.
Beautifully said. And I'm just listening to you in this interview, and a lot of your life philosophy matches up with yoga philosophy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. There is a sense of reverence to life, of belief, and depends which school of yoga you're from. But for me, the body is not an obstacle to growth. It is the mean to growth. So we can use our physical body. And even if, you know, you don't have your whole physicality, or you can't run, or you can't, I don't know, hike because of a disability or whatever, your body still has so much breath, so much subtle body. And there's a yoga teacher, I think, called Matthew Sanford, who had a car accident, and he teaches from his wheelchair. And he's so in tune with his subtle body that he can lead students and beings into an incredible state of more self-awareness, and how to use your body with more respect in a way, and more attention and more care. And it all has to do, again, with reparenting. And in a way, yoga doesn't use the words of reparenting, but it uses metaphors where the tender warrior in all of us, the conscious warrior in all of us, from the Bhagavad Gita, you know, where Arjuna, where they have the big battle, the field is the battle. And if the knower looks at the body from perspective, so if us, the knower, look at our own body and our own lives with perspective, then we become wiser. Then we become more centered. Then we become more discerning. So absolutely, you're right. There are such deep, non-religious, accessible, universal lessons in yogic philosophy that I would feel comfortable showing it and sharing it with anybody.
Yeah. So you've talked a lot about you being a mother, about your parents and how they raised you, and about how even yoga can almost reparent ourselves. But what about friendships? I know in your book, you talked about Huma Abedin being a source of strength. And I saw that in 2016, Michelle Obama, as she was introducing you for our Let Girls Learn conference, she called you her soulmate. So how can we as women work with our friendships to be reparented and remothered?
You don't need a first lady who's extraordinary, by the way, to say that about you, to know that you are a soulmate. To you, Amy, to me, Sophie, we are all soulmates. We are all sisters in this quest for more equality and more respect towards our bodies, our minds as women, our rights everywhere on this planet. And that the boys and men in our lives also suffer greatly because they've been put in this very narrow definition of what it means to be a man. And I know that you work with boys, Amy, and you're changing their lives through the practice. It is an imperative for every woman and every being to understand that sisterhood, brotherhood, circles of friendships are a net of comfort and of safety that we are responsible for to make sure that every thread, every person has a safe place in there, no matter where they come from, no matter who they vote for, so that we don't make holes in that net that people will go through and communities will go through. That's how I see it. But I'm very, very lucky to have an incredible circle of friends and sisters and brothers. And I nourish those relationships and I love them and I cherish them. They're important. They're sacred, really.
And you still have close relationships from high school or childhood friendships, do you not?
Way back. Yeah, mm-hmm. Way, way back. I still have friendships from 30, 40 years ago with men and women. I just feel so lucky. And some of them go through phases. It's normal, right? Sometimes we lose friendships. Sometimes they come back. Sometimes they don't. It's okay. It's okay. We keep attaching. We want to possess people. We don't want to be abandoned. That's our inherent longing. We don't want to be abandoned. We want to be loved and connected with. It's okay. This is what we're made to be, to feel like when we come into this life. And we suffer when we don't. So we have to make sure that we encourage each other to have the, you know, education, knowledge, and emotional literacy to be able to better navigate all of this all together, closer together, no pun intended. Yes.
Well, as we come to a close, I am so interested in the youth, the Gen Z that are coming up. Do you have anything you could say for young women or young men or both that would help maybe some of us in the older generation understand them better?
You make me emotional when you ask me this. I taught a retreat a couple of days ago before this interview, and there was a big group and there were teenagers in there. My heart goes out to children and teenagers. I know it's not easy for you. I know that very well. I'm a mother and I also have teenagers. You're already carrying the torch of what it means to be human and how to build our future. Like, you're leaders today, not tomorrow. And we want to support you. We want to help you. We want to love you. We want to set you free as much as we want to love you. And we know that you have this need for independence and you can rebel and get angry against the system. It's okay. Like Gloria Steinem said, the great feminist, you know, first the truth will piss you off, but it will set you free. So fight for where you hurt. Yes? Expose your suffering. Don't keep it in, because you'll realize that so many others share that wound. So many others. And there's always help along the way. If you don't find it in your own family units or close circle of friends, know that, you know, Amy, I, so many millions of other adults along the path are here to help you and love you. And we're all just one big family. And I think that, you know, with the constant stimulation of information that's coming to teenagers' brains and children's brains through screens, yes, I have to say, I'm reading more and more, you know, on this, and science is really showing that it is even detrimental to the development of a child's brain at so many different steps. Because now, as we raise children, because we're so scared to push them into the world because it's unsafe out there, we are taking away from them their inherent heroic journey where they can test their limits at low risk, low cost. When you're young, who cares if you fall off the tree and hurt your knee? You know that you can get back up and you'll be fine. But if we don't give young people the experience of testing their limits, falling down, getting back up, pushing them out into the world, when they get into adulthood, how do they do it? How do they deal with rejection? How do they deal with trauma? How do they deal with people judging them? That's life. But also, how do they deal with being able to take perspective from social media, from all the currents of negativity, from our obsession with showing the most perfect angle of ourselves when nobody's perfect? And then add to that, you know, plastic surgery and all the pervasive forms in which we self-betray, in which we never feel good enough, and in which we lie to ourselves thinking we only do this to feel better. We do it because we were taught that it would make us feel better. No child comes onto the earth thinking that it will have to go, you know, and change their whole appearance in order to be validated and loved. It breaks my heart to see people having to do this. And again, we're not talking about people who have, you know, malformations. And I think it's absolutely wonderful that people have access to science and to be able to change their bodies in order to live a healthier life. But we've gone to a apotheosis and point where people are suffering so much from it that until my last breath, I want to, you know, be creative enough and loving enough to not fight it constantly, but to find more authenticity and to share that authenticity with people so they know they can move from that place as well, instead of having to conform and fit in.
Mm.
I love you, teenagers. And
yes, yes. It's so heartwarming to listen to that message and take it in. So.
It's also heartbreaking to know how many are suffering. And now with all our technological advancements, we're killing ourselves at an unprecedented rate. When we fragmented communities, we fragmented the individual. And most people feel like they're missing pieces to their own selves. And they take their life away because they don't feel loved. That is not acceptable.
Last question. Do you feel like there's hope? I mean, I can't imagine you would have written this book Closer Together if you didn't feel that after all that we've talked about, there is still hope.
So remember, I've been on the co-political path. I've met a lot of people in my life from different walks of life. The answer is absolutely. Under one condition, that we never stop to protect the truth, that we never stop fighting for human goodness and the best angels of our nature, and that we unite as human beings who have those values and the sense of discernment so we can actually push the dark forces away, because they are there. And let's not be naive. Let's see them for what they are and decide to never be invaded by the darkness, because the light will win if we make sure we shine it.
Mm. Thank you so much for being here today and taking the time to share this wisdom with us.
And I want to thank you and your community for everything that you're doing to make people's lives better. And there's so much wisdom in your own work. It was an honor for me to collaborate with you. Thank you from a deep place in my heart. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Sophie. We are so grateful to have you out there helping people to understand mental health. It's been an area that has been essentially ignored by healthcare. I would say, at least here in the United States, you know, even if you have healthcare for your physical body, a lot of times there's nothing for mental health. So to have you out there with the good fight, writing a book like this, Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves and Loving One Another, or Loving Each Other, by Random House, it really is important to have people talking about mental health. And if you don't know, Sophie has been a mental health advocate and public speaker and mentor in this area for over 20 years. And she's been an ambassador and a champion for youth around self-esteem, gender equality, emotional literacy, and physical activity. She has received the UN Recognition Award for her humanitarian work and was named the first national volunteer for the Canadian Mental Health Association in 2022. She also has served as a Youth Leadership Global Ambassador for Plan International Canada. So she has been doing this work with mental health, not only on herself throughout her entire life. And that's a beautiful thing about the book, is you get to really have a window into what it was like to grow up as Sophie. But she has then taken what she's learned through self-reflection, through the work that she's done on herself, and she's making it accessible for all of us. There are many, many experts in this book that I'm sure many of you will recognize. We've already named a few, like Gabor Mate. There are people like Deb Dana, who is one of the people that works closely with Stephen Porges. There's John Gray, who made popular this whole thing about attachment styles. There's Harville Hendricks, Liz Plank, and many, many others that have just done a great job helping really flush out what's going on in this book. And I had the pleasure of also being interviewed for the book, which I'm so humbled about and grateful for the opportunity. So I just want to say in closing that this book, Closer Together, is all about how do we contribute to the world? How can we find a sense of self? How can we prepare ourselves to deal with big emotions? How can we get what we need from relationships? And how can we give to our relationships? And all of this comes out so clearly and beautifully in these stories that Sophie is telling us, and then all the science to back it up. So thank you so much for being with us today. I think you'll really enjoy this interview. And of course, we thank Sophie for being here with us. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. You can also see the video versions on YouTube. If you'd like to get early release, you can always support us as a Patreon member. If you'd like to find us on YouTube or Patreon, just type in the Yoga Therapy Hour and Optimal State and you'll find us. All right. Thank you for your support. We appreciate you so much. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.